the divine souls. So far in this series on the significance of Radha Krishna devotion in Kali Yuga, I explained to you that every soul is seeking only happiness. That happiness is denoted by a term in Sanskrit called Anand. And Anand is defined as such a happiness which is unlimited in amount and lasts forever. And not only that, but goes on increasing every moment. Such a happiness is only found in one place, God. In fact, that is the very definition of God, is Anand. Although we say Sat Chit Anand, Sat Chit Anand Brahm, but Sat and Chit are Visheshana, they're qualifiers, like adjectives. What is the actual thing that's being qualified? Anand. So God is Anand, or wo Anand kaisa hai, wo Sat hai, wo Chit hai. So that Anand is Sat, which means it's a real, substantially existing happiness. And Chit, which means it's divine, alive, Chetan. Such happiness is only divine and can only be equated with God. Therefore, raso vai sah rasagvam hyevayam labdhvanandi bhavati. Only by attaining God, who himself is bliss, can a soul become blissful. Thus, the goal of every soul is only to attain God. And through attaining God, we get perfect happiness. This is possible only when we're born in a human body. No other life form affords the opportunity to even perform karma, let alone attain God. So since we've received a human birth in this life, if we use it for finding God, then we're using it for what it was really meant. And if we don't, then we pass through this life, we die, and in our next birth, we could be born in any species, and it could be many, many lifetimes before we get another chance to be born as human. So since every soul is desiring only perfect happiness, and that perfect happiness is one and the same as God, you can also say that every soul is a perfect astik, which means that every soul believes in God and can't stop believing in God even if they wanted to. Every soul lives for God, desires only God, loves God, is a perfect devotee of God. Someone may say, well, I'm not, I don't even believe in God. Do you believe in happiness? Yes. Do you want happiness? Yes. Then you believe in God and you want God. Every soul is busy every day. Nahi kashchit charnamapi jat tishthatya karma krit. This mind never takes a rest, even for a fraction of a second. And every moment, what is it doing? Thinking about how to get happiness. That's all we think about, every moment of every day. So it means every moment of every day, we're thinking about how to attain God, because God is happiness. So even the one who professes not to believe in God thinks of God all day long, because he's thinking of finding happiness. But we can only succeed in this quest when we're born in a human body. And this life is charnabhangur. We don't know when it's going to end. So we have to try to know God now, before it's too late. But then we learned from our scriptures that it's impossible to know God, because God is beyond our mind, beyond our senses. We can't see him. We can't know him, because he's divine and our senses and mind are material. So it's impossible for anyone to know God. But then we learned there is a way, that if someone receives God's grace, his kripa, only that person can know God. So you can't know God through your own intellectual effort, but you can know God by receiving his grace. So how is his grace received? His grace is received by surrendering to him. So you see, we have to do something in order to receive his grace. If someone just says, okay, then I'll wait for God to grace me and I won't worry about my spiritual progress, I'll just indulge in the pleasures of this world, and when God's good and ready, he can go ahead and grace me, and then I'll know him automatically. Or when it's in my destiny, I'll just get God's grace and become God-realized. Or when the time is right, I'll get God's grace and become God-realized. But we learned that we shouldn't sit and wait, because God is already gracing us with opportunities to gain the correct knowledge of what we have to do, because we have to do something. God realization is never destined. It's not something you can just wait to have happen to you. It's something you have to do. So the thing we have to do in order to receive God's grace is to surrender to him. Then there was a question that came up. If God is requiring something from us in order to grace us, in exchange for his grace, it means he's not selflessly gracing us. He's not akarna karun. He's not binuhetu sanehi. But then we learn that what is surrender? Surrender actually means doing nothing. So the one who learns to do nothing receives God's grace, and the one who keeps doing, he remains bereft of God's grace. So if the government announced that all government employees take the month off, everyone who stays home this month will get paid double, and if you come to work, you won't get any pay, or you'll get half pay. Would anyone in their right mind go to work that month? Yet God is telling us, stop doing. Do nothing and I'll grace you and you'll get God realized. And we say, no, I'm going to keep doing. So when we look at it this way, that surrender actually means putting everything in God's hands. Surrendering to him from inside. Our mind has to be surrendered to him. Then we see that actually this condition of becoming surrendered to him is not a demand from God's side. It's not an exchange that he wants something from us, and until we give that to him, he won't grace us. No, it's just the means of receiving his grace. He's ready and willing to grace us, but we have to surrender to him. There's an example of Draupadi. Draupadi, as you know, was being dragged to the court by Dushasan. By her hair, he dragged her to the court with the intention of disrobing her in front of everybody. So she was shocked and appalled and wanted at any cost to avoid that from happening. So when she was there in the court and he was preparing to take her sari in his hand, first, what did she do? She looked to her husbands, the Pandavas, Arjun, etc., thinking, surely they will come to my aid. How will they let this happen to me? But no, their hands were tied. They couldn't do anything. So she gave up hope from that side. Then she thought of the elders in the court, like Bhishma, Pitama, Dhritarashtra, Kripacharya, Dronacharya. Surely these great elders will not let this happen to me. But none of them said anything to make it stop either. Then she thought, okay, if no one else is going to help me, I'll help myself. And she caught the end of her sari between her teeth and clamped down hard, bit down on it. And Dushasan, who has the strength of 10,000 elephants, is getting ready to pull on her sari, and she has it clamped between her teeth. Now, Draupadi also had great strength. But when Dushasan pulled, she could feel it slipping out from her teeth. And just when it was about to slip, then she called out, "Ha Nath Dwarika Vasin." She called out to Krishna, "Oh Krishna, help me. I'm helpless. Please save me." And Krishna appeared, Ambaravatar. He made her sari just keep extending. The more Dushasan kept pulling off of her body, the more material kept appearing on her body, until he had a big heap of sari material. And she was still clothed, and eventually he got exhausted and gave up. But you see the internal process that Draupadi went through. Initially, she wasn't surrendered to Krishna. Initially, she looked to her husbands. Then she looked to the elders. Then she looked to herself. Finally, when she gave up hope from everyone, Anya Shrayanam Tyago Nanyata Narad Bhakti Darshan. Naradji says, Ananyata. It means no other but one. That's surrender. Surrender means wholehearted surrender to Krishna. So if we reach that stage, then with His grace, we know Him. It is said that during this whole Leela, Shri Krishna was actually in Dwarika. He was eating, and Rukminiji was serving him. So at one point he stopped, like with a half bite in his mouth. He hadn't swallowed, he didn't take it out, he just stopped. Like you would do if you're eating something and you get like a little pebble in your dal or something, that face you make, like, oh, what was that? So he stopped like that, halfway through chewing something. And Rukmini asked, what's wrong? What happened? He said, there's a bhakt in trouble. She said, go to her, help her. He said, I can't. She's still trying to help herself. She hasn't stopped doing yet. And I've said hundreds of times, Ananyash chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. I'll take your full responsibility, but you have to put everything in my hands. Right now she's got her sari clamped between her teeth. Achha bal lagao. Dekhte hain. So only when she gave up all hope from everyone else and from herself, from inside, had only hope in Krishna, then he took over. This is Sharanagati. This is surrender. Shri Krishna says, Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat chantim nigachhati Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati Gita. As soon as someone surrenders, Kshipram, immediately he receives Shri Krishna's grace. And Krishna protects him. He gets divine bliss and he can never fall again. Te shamaham samudharta mrityu sansara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha mayaveshita chetasam Gita. As soon as someone surrenders, I immediately take them across this ocean of Maya, Shri Krishna says to Arjuna. So we surrender, we receive His grace. Yad durlabham yad aprapyam manaso yanna gocharam tadapyaprarthito dhyato dadati madhusudanah. Garuda Puran. It is said that Shri Krishna gives what is durlabh, very difficult to attain. Aprapya, what is impossible to obtain. And manasah yanna gocharam, that which cannot even be imagined. He gives it tadapyaprarthito. Without even being asked, he gives it as soon as a soul surrenders. So he gives us everything, what is even beyond our imagination. We can't imagine that much. We can't imagine infinity. But he gives us unlimited gyan, unlimited anand. So even that which we can't imagine, he gives us. We don't even have to ask for it. All we have to do is surrender. He's giving it free of charge. So this condition which must be fulfilled of becoming surrendered to him, it's not a demand. It's not a payment for his grace. He doesn't get anything by us surrendering to him. It's just the means of receiving his grace. Because the grace has to be received in the heart. So in order to receive that grace, the heart has to be surrendered. Your man. Thus, mana eva manushyanam karanam bandhamokchayo. This verse comes in many different Upanishads, several different Puranas, also in Panchadashi. It means that the mind alone is the cause of bondage and liberation for a soul. If that soul's mind is surrendered to the world, it's the cause of bondage. And if it's surrendered to God, it becomes the cause of liberation. Cheta khalvasya bandhaya muktaye chatmano matam. The Bhagavatam also says, the mind is the only thing that's responsible for whether we stay under the bondage of Maya or whether we can attain God. So it's the mind that has to be surrendered. However, the mind is already surrendered in the world. And as I explained yesterday, surrender and attachment go hand in hand. Why are we attached in the world? Because we believe there's happiness in the world. We have hope from the world. We're dependent emotionally on worldly things and people instead of depending on God, or instead of believing that he could come to us. And through attaining him, we would get happiness. We believe that by getting more of the world, we'll get happiness. So, this mind has to be turned towards God. If we don't turn our mind towards God, we can't receive his grace. That's surrender. So we have to detach our mind from the world and attach it to God. That's the practical form of surrender. How will we do that? Well, we have to gain a little bit more understanding. One, about the nature of the world. That what's the difference between worldly happiness and divine happiness? That we have to understand. And we also have to gain more confidence in God, that God would grace us. So in order to develop our confidence, we have to clear a couple of doubts about God. And the first doubt that we'll address is a very basic question. How do we know God exists? Some people ask that question. It's a good question, actually. How do we know God exists? Can we prove that God exists? That's a doubt that people have. In fact, we have this doubt. Because Ved says, Kathopanishad says, Asti tyevopalabdhavyas tattva bhavena cho bhayo. The moment a soul actually believes in God, God appears before that soul. You get God realized the second you believe in God. So we don't have 100% faith in God's existence. So let's examine this question. How do we know God exists? Or how can we develop our confidence in God's existence? There are three types of proof used in trying to understand something's existence or accept the existence of something. The first type is called pratyaksh praman. Second type is called anuman praman. And the third type is called shabda praman. Pratyaksh praman means you saw for yourself. You have your own experience. You don't need anyone else to tell you. That's pratyaksh praman. That's the praman that everybody likes the best. Like we say, seeing is believing. So when people don't have enough understanding about the nature of God, they tend to look for this pratyaksh praman first. For instance, many people say, well, I can't see God, so why should I believe he exists? Show him to me, then I'll believe you. Seems like a logical statement on the surface. However, if you look more deeply into our daily lives, there are so many things we accept without pratyaksh praman. In fact, you could say one of the only things we've refused to accept without pratyaksh praman is the existence of God. Everything else we're willing to have faith in without seeing with our own eyes. For example, we were told as children by our mother and father, I'm your mother, I'm your father. Did they show you any proof of that? Did they show you a video of you being born? You wouldn't have recognized yourself anyway. How can you tell one baby from another at that age? Did they show you any DNA test to prove that they're your parents? So you have no pratyaksh praman, but you believe them. You know what that is? That's called shabda praman. You take someone else's word for it. That's shabd means someone else's word. So you believe your mother is your mother, not based on pratyaksh praman. Such an important thing. What if your mother wasn't your mother? You could have come from somewhere else and they just decided not to tell you. It's possible, it happens. Yet we just believe it. But we won't believe in God without pratyaksh praman. When it comes to God, we say, no, show me. I refuse to believe what anyone else is saying. You show me first. That's like asking for the result, the phal, before doing the work. That's like saying, I want apples, but I refuse to plant the tree and tend it. I want a university degree, but you give me the degree first, then I'll enroll in your school, pay my tuition, study all the classes, and take all the exams. But first you give me that degree. So you have to earn that final proof of meeting God face to face. In fact, we follow a similar process in the scientific method. You know, when a scientist does an experiment, first he has an idea in mind that this thing might exist. It might be something like this. So he has no proof at that point. He has an idea. Then he does his experiment and he proves it right or he proves it wrong. Only after performing the experiment, he gets the pratyaksh praman, the actual experiential proof, empirical evidence of the existence of that thing. What if he just sat back from the beginning and said, oh no, you're saying this thing exists, I refuse to believe you. No, you have to do the experiment. And just like in material science, every experiment should be reproducible. The results have to be reproducible by other scientists who are qualified to perform that experiment. If such a qualified scientist performs the same experiment and doesn't get the same results, then he can refute what the other scientist is saying. But without performing the experiment, how can he just stand there and say, nope, I don't believe you? That scientist will say, ye bachcha hai. Pehle karke dekho. This is what saints in their mind, in their heart, probably think of us. when we say, exercising the full extent of our limited material intellects, we say, no, 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 I have not seen God, so I don't believe he exists. And that saint who has divine eyes, who's seeing God right beside us, what can he do but smile? Bachaya bichara. Unless we follow the path outlined by the saints and scriptures, by following that path, you become qualified to see God. Then you get your evidence, that pratyaksh pramana. So you can't get the pratyaksh praman without becoming qualified for it or without doing the work to get in that position. It doesn't work in the world. It doesn't work in the spiritual world either. So the next time you hear someone say, well, how can I believe in God if I haven't seen him? You can explain to that person that believing in God is not blind faith. Blind faith is just believing without understanding. You should have intelligent faith in God. Understand that since God is divine and you have material eyes, you can't see him. Very simple. So you have to get divine eyes. How do you get divine eyes? There's a process you have to follow in order to become surrendered to God, purify your heart, that vessel that has to receive God's grace. Once your heart has been purified, God can grace you, you get divine eyes, you see him. Well, someone may say, but has anyone else done this? Yes, there are hundreds and thousands of documented cases of souls like you and I who have followed this process and attained God, thus getting the proof of God's existence. We can still choose not to believe, but that's not logical. The logical thing is to say, okay, all of these people are saying it's true. They are saying, I followed this process and I got the results. So the logical thing for us to do would be to say, okay, let me also try the same thing and I'll see if I get it. There are so many things that we choose to believe in the world based on someone else's saying so. Either we trust a lot in that person, they're an expert or they're someone we trust, or we trust them because there are many others corroborating what they're saying. And in addition to that, we also like it when there's a means for us to also get the proof for ourselves. So as an example, everyone I know believes in the existence of atoms and electrons and protons, but very few people I've ever met have ever seen one with their own eyes. In other words, they have no pratyaksh praman of the existence of these particles. But they believe it. Why? Scientists are telling them that it's true. See, they have faith in, they're having faith in a material person under the bondage of Maya. And as long as someone is under the bondage of Maya, they're under the effect of anger, greed, desire, attachment. People under the bondage of Maya have reasons to lie. They may lie at any time. But we have faith. Oh, this scientist is saying, okay, I believe it. Not only one scientist is saying, many scientists are saying. They're the experts. Why shouldn't I believe them? And I can also get the proof if I want. I can also study and become a great scientist and perform the same experiment and see for myself. Or these other countries in the world that you've heard of but you've never been to, don't you believe they exist anyway? Did anyone ever say in his geography class in school, excuse me, teacher, you're telling me this Russia exists? Why should I believe you? The teacher will say, oh, it's in this book. See the world map? It's written here. Everybody's saying that Russia exists. I haven't seen Russia with my own eyes. Why should I believe you? Teacher, have you seen Russia with your own eyes? Well, no. Then why do you believe Russia exists? Because everyone is saying Russia exists. If you want the pratyaksh praman, though, what do you have to do? Get on a plane or get on a boat and go there and see for yourself. It's ridiculous to deny the existence of Russia without at least going there to see for yourself. So, it's the same thing with God. It doesn't make sense just to deny the existence of God outright. You should try to attain God, follow the path outlined by the scriptures, and if you can't attain, if you actually do that and you fail to attain God, then you could say, no, this is incorrect. But it never happens. And we have hundreds and thousands of experts in the spiritual field saying, yes, it's true. Just like the experts in the scientific field say, it's true. I've seen an atom with my own eyes through a microscope. I've seen an electron with my own eyes through an electron microscope, but I've seen it. So we have all those God-realized saints saying, God is real. I've seen God. So many documented stories in our scriptures of souls who surrendered to God and God appeared before them. So this is the proof we use initially. This Shabda Praman is the basis for our faith and confidence in God initially. Shastra Yonitvat. Brahma Sutra says, you should take the words of the Vedas and other scriptures as proof of God's existence. Na vedavin manute tam brihantam. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, you can only know God through the scriptures, through the Vedas, because right now you can't see him, so you need some basis to go forward. The initial basis to go forward is the Shabda Praman. Then accordingly you practice, and later you get your own Anubhav, your own Pratyaksh Praman. The other kind of proof, what we call Anuman Praman, that's you get through the power of deduction. For instance, if someone says, well, just look at this world. It's so extensive, yet so systematic. All the suns have planets orbiting around them. All those solar systems are also in motion within the galaxy. The galaxy itself is in motion, and there are uncountable such galaxies, and those galaxies form clusters of galaxies, which form superclusters of galaxies, and all of that is in motion, yet perfectly coordinated. There's no traffic jams or accidents up there in the sky of galaxies bumping into each other. How does it happen? So someone may say, there must be some supreme intelligence behind all of this. It's deduction. Or someone may say, look, it something as simple and small as a harmonium takes somebody to make it, right? This universe is so much more complex and extensive than a small harmonium. So if this small harmonium required a creator, then this universe must also need some supreme power to cause it to come into being. This is called Anuman Praman. You just deduce that God must exist because of these things. But this is not a final proof. This is like a where there's smoke, there's fire situation. If you've seen fire before, and you've seen that, okay, wherever there's a fire, there's always smoke. And if there's smoke, there has to be a fire because smoke only comes from fire. If you've had that pratyaksh anubhav, then later on down the road, if sometime you see smoke rising from a distant hill, even if you don't see the flames, you can assume, you can deduce that there has to be a fire there. So even though you haven't seen the fire, you call the fire department because you saw the smoke. This is Anuman Praman. But it only works if you have a prior experience where you know of a definite connection between those two things, smoke and fire. We have no such direct experience of God yet, so that Anuman Praman cannot be used as a final proof of God's existence. The only way to get that is by, we have to take the Shabda Praman, the words of the scriptures and saints that tell us of God's existence, and based on that we form faith in God, then we follow the path to God, then we attain God, and we get our Pratyaksha Praman. So this is the way it works. This is how we can prove God's existence for our own selves. But initially we have to have faith. But that faith is an intelligent faith based on the words of all those who have gone before us who have attained God. So we form a faith, an intelligent faith, based on their words with the intention of proving God's existence to ourselves, of getting that divine vision of God, which is the final proof of God's existence. So with such logic, we can remove that doubt of God's existence. We can remove that doubt that, is there really a God? We can just have faith in the words of the Vedas and other scriptures and feel in our heart that God does exist, and one day I will attain Him by following the path to God. There are still some other doubts, such as, if God exists and He is omnipresent, as our scriptures say He is, then it seems a little odd that we don't get at least a little bit of experience of Him. If you mix some sugar in water and drink that water, the water tastes sweet. So God is also present in that water and in the sugar, and He's the ocean of absolute sweetness. Yet we don't taste even a drop of that divine bliss. How is it possible? People also doubt that, how can God be omnipresent if we are unable to experience Him and He's all around us and even within us? So we have to resolve this doubt, but we'll do that tomorrow. बोलिए वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की जय